Pints in the Corner is a music history podcast about the Channel Club in Boston, Mass. Dinky Dawson and Tony Rain are your hosts. They interview channel performers and workers, bringing out stories and memories of the great music and events that came through this iconic South Boston venue.
With Tony Rain and Dinky Dawson, unfortunately Tony unable to be with us because he's still recovering from a illness that he's had for over a year and a half now. And yeah, and so Sean's taken the lead with me with the interviewing. We've been doing a real good job, so we've been having a great fun talking to people and about their lives and about the channel and about what they've continued to do afterwards and stuff.
Right, right.
But before we go on, I just want to say, you knocked me off the blues charts. I was number one with Fleetwood Mac, Shrine 69, and next week I see Tom Hambridge, and he... I started laughing. I says, oh, I've got to ask some serious questions here.
Oh, man, that's funny. That's funny. Well, you got to give my best to Tony, please.
Oh, no, definitely, definitely.
Such a dear friend. I love him, you know.
I know that. I know that because of what he's done for everybody. And we all love him, and we're all with him and stuff. But we'll start this off proper. Welcome to Two Pints in the Corner, Tom Hambridge, along with Sean McNally, who's our guest interviewer. And it's time we got you, Tom. It's definitely time we got you. The first question, I know Sean's got a lot of questions, but I've got this one straight away. Is how did you start working in the business? How did it all begin in respect of growing up and everything else? How did you start playing music?
Well, first of all, let me just say it's great to talk to you both. It's exciting to be on Two Pints in a Corner. It's awesome.
Two pints.
Two pints.
That's it. It was me and Tony sat drinking Guinness.
Yeah, I bet. Well, you know, I started out just banging on pots and pans when I was really young. And my mom, I had older sisters and an older brother and a lot of music in the house. And my mom and my siblings always said, you've always been a drummer and always been doing this. So I don't remember a time when I never was, you know, because people, I know that a lot of, obviously people say, hey, I played guitar when I was 16, or I started playing drums when I was in high school or something. I don't have that memory. I only know I was playing because I got my first drum kit when I was five.
Wow.
My older brother was 5 years older than me, and I know he was in a band when he was 12, and I was the drummer, and then he was in a band in high school, and I was the drummer. And so I've always just been playing. My first gig where I got paid was in the third grade. So I've just always been,
I love it.
I know, it's crazy, man.
I love it.
And so...
I love it.
Fortunately, I mean, I don't know how to do anything else. You know, I mean, I write songs, and I've been in bands, and right now I produce records and I play drums. And so I've just kind of been, knock on wood, doing what I've always been doing. So that's how it all started. It wasn't one moment, you know, so, I just always been doing it.
Well, that's life. That's how it should be.
Yeah.
So my first question, you must have had a great agent to get paid as a third grader. My goodness.
Yes.
I know. It was $30, I think. It was
that's good, too, at that time period.
I know,
that's real
back
good.
Then. I
real
know,
good.
Yeah, I mean, it was high school band. We play all the high school, but my mom would have to drive me and drop me off.
Yeah.
Because I'd have to unload my drums, and then she'd pick me up at midnight or something. You know?
I love it.
It was crazy. It's crazy, man. I thank them for being so, you know, being so supportive.
So supportive, yeah. So before Sean gets going, another one. How did you get into the blues?
Wow, you know, I that's a good question. I've never thought of myself as a blues artist or a blues whatever. Like, you know, people say, you know, the top blues producer in the country or whatever. You know, I didn't set out to do that at all. I just was making records. You know, I was in Boston. I had my band TH and the Wreckage, and I had to produce the records, and because we couldn't afford a big time producer, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was just doing that. And then I started doing that for, you know, the songs would be on the radio, BCN or something. And people would say, who produced the record? Who wrote the song? And I'd say I did, you know? And so they go, can you do that for my band? So I would do that for Susan Tedeschi and different people. And I think what ended up happening was, when I started to get more known at it, people like Johnny Winter would call, and people like record companies would say, so kind of rootsy rock stuff.
Okay.
And a lot of the records ended up in the blues bin at the record store, and then they'd be up for blues awards.
Wow.
And I think that's kind of how it happened. I mean, I still write, pop songs, and I write rock songs. And my record, for example, my latest record, Down the Hatch, is like been a number one blues record, in a lot of places, a lot of countries. And to me, it's not, it's me playing some blues, but a lot of rock and roll, and a lot of, I think it sounds more like, some of the reviewers will say, this sounds like Tom Petty meets, some other band. And so I don't sit down to do blues, but if it ends up, and then I work with, I'll work with B.B. King or Buddy Guy, and they're blues guys. So, I don't know. It's just, I didn't set out to be the blues guy, but I do love the blues,
You love music, and the blues happens to be a feeling that you get, and what have you. So with that, you started coming to the channel when? When did you start? And I don't mean playing, I just mean just to come in there and look at people. Watch people.
right. Well, probably when, I was, probably, what was the drinking age? I mean, I don't know, 18, 19,
that's
20.
It, that's
I would feeling. I would go in, and I have a fond memory of sitting at the bar, not really knowing anybody, and sitting there, and Roger Earle from Foghat was sitting at the bar, and he just started talking to me, and I thought, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen, this is the drummer from Foghat, and it's just crazy stuff. But I as a young age, I started going there and seeing all the bands, and then I put a band together and tried to get gigs there, we ended up doing a lot of gigs there, which was just wonderful,
Sean, you can tell him how many he played. You did.
Yeah, definitely the channel. We tried at least 21 times you played there, Tom, that's a lot, which is great. And then obviously you had it down to that. So, but yeah, we'll go over a few of those later. I do want to step back a bit, though. I know you grew up in Buffalo, and then you came to Berkeley in 80, I believe, right? I was going to say, it's kind of funny. You're like one of the few people from Berkeley that I think has actually made the whole 4 years. It seems like guys go for a few semesters and they take off or whatnot. But you got the full experience at Berkeley, got the degree in professional music. Maybe just talk about how that kind of, I'm assuming that kind of launched you in the Boston scene, so to speak, as far as making connections and whatnot. Maybe talk about the Berkeley years a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, well, I think, because at Berkeley, I was able to, like what I was talking about, I was doing gigs long before, in high school and junior high. So when I got to Boston when I was like 18, I was kind of an anomaly. Some people would say, what are you doing with your drums getting into a cab at, 8 o'clock in the evening? And I'd be like, well, aren't you going to go practice? And I go, well, I got a gig, I just looked at it was the Phoenix, I guess. I looked in the Phoenix and went, who's looking for music? Who's looking for a drummer, Because that's how I supported myself. That's how I did, that's what my job was. It always was. So when I got to Berkeley, I started doing it. So I got a gig with, the first gig I got in town was, it's that country rock artist looking for full-time salary position, and I was at Berkeley thinking, I don't have time, I can't do this, but I'm going to try it out anyway. And I went into a Looney Tunes there, and his name was John Lincoln Wright in the Sour Mash Boys.
Oh, man.
And I went,
nice.
And I went, and I saw him on an album cover, and I went, holy shit, I got to call this guy. I got to call that and get an audition. So I called, and the audition was to go down to McNasty's with some club, and wait till the last set, and then he was going to call up the guys who are auditioning to sit in. And I had a fake ID, because I wasn't old enough. And the thing also said you had to be like at least 25 and versed in a lot of things you had to do. I didn't know anything about any of this stuff. And I got in, and when they brought me up, I remember he said, Carl Perkins, you know Carl Perkins? And I was just looking blank, and I was like, yeah, sure. And he goes, he counted off Honey Don't. And I thought, oh, the Beatles. Yeah, no problem, you know. And then he said, do you know like this song? And I thought, I don't know it. And then it was, you know, it was an old Chuck Berry song. So I, you know, that somebody had covered. And so I got the gig. And so I had to tell my teachers at Berkeley, you know, when I was going on the road. And they were very supportive, you know. So through those 4 years at Berkeley, I mean, I played with Roy Buchanan. I toured with him. I played with lots of people that they would give me, you know, the teachers there. I'd say to the teacher, you know, I got this gig with Roy Buchanan, and I'm going to go out for 6 weeks. And they were like, oh, my gosh, just go do it, you know. And so you come back and make up the work, you know. And because they were all musicians, and they had gigs, you know. And they were trying to get gigs. So, it, you know, that's I kind of just did that, you know, and got to be able to play around town and got the lay of the land, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Awesome. That's great.
That's good.
Again, the, you know, the actual get up there and playing and just kind of winging it, and at the age you were and just being open to trying anything pretty much, and here you are, you know, 40 years later in the business.
It's the feeling, Tom.
You go back. We listen to Channel. We'll go back to one of the stuff later on. But the Channel, yeah, we kind of at least 21 shows. You headlined there quite a bit, Tom. And then with your band, the records, like we talked about, you also did some co-headlining gigs with other legendary Boston bands like The Neighborhoods, The Fools, Fahrenheit, Treat Her Right. But you also had some amazing support slots opening for bands, you know, pretty historic people like Carlene Carter, Mark Farner, Bo Diddley, Bobby Turner, Overdrive, and then one that I'll never forget, the Roy Orbison show. Maybe you can talk about some of the, your memories from actually playing on that stage.
Oh, my God. This is, you know, man, thank you for doing that research. I was nervous because I was thinking, I remember, you know, a lot of those shows, but then half of the ones you mentioned I forgot about that were amazing. Like the Roy Orbison, I know, was his second last show he ever played.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, that was an amazing night to be at the Channel, and it was packed. And I remember Roy, I mean, it was such an honor to be on that bill. And, you know, I think I still have a little poster somewhere from that. And, but also, like, you know, I know what you mean. I forgot about Bachman Turner Overdrive and Mark Farner. And, I know Fahrenheit, one of my favorite bands, Fahrenheit, Charlie Fahrenheit. I love him. I love those guys. And,
Bo Diddley, open for Bo Diddley.
Oh, yeah, Bo Diddley. And I actually played drums for Bo Diddley, too, for a while. Now I think about it, yeah. But some craziness with that. But I know one time I was playing with, I'd be the band leader for a lot of kind of oldies acts, the Coasters and the Gary Puckett and Union Gap. I remember I was in the Hermits for a little bit, you know. Crazy things. And I was playing downtown, like on the Esplanade, with Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. Dancing in the streets. And I played with her a lot. And I got the gig opening for Fahrenheit that night. It was a tight squeeze, but what I did was I said to Martha, I said, I got to leave right after the gig. And she goes, where are you going? I go, I'm going to this other gig, you know. She goes, well, where is it, far? And I go, no, it's not. It's downtown. I mean, it's not far at all. And she goes, well, we'll come with you. And so Martha Reeves and the Vandellas came. And I remember Charlie was on the side of the stage watching our set. And, I at one point in the show, I said, hey, I'm going to bring up some guests. And I brought up Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. And we did Dancing in the Street. And everybody was looking at me like, what the hell are you doing, man? You know what I mean? Like, and it was
I love it. I love it. That's
so fun. Wonderful times at the channel. And the Fools, I know, you know, like I used to just play, I'd get asked to play drums for other bands. And one night at the channel, the Fools, their drummer, couldn't be there. And I think I was opening. Yeah, I opened the show with TH and the Wreckage, and then I played their set. You know, and I love those guys, man. Those guys are awesome. So that was like a dream gig, you know.
And you did a bunch of special guest gigs, you know, for benefits. Dirty Water taping you did. And many benefits. The drive. Treat her, you know, it just Mickey O, I think he did a benefit for Mickey O.
You're right. Man, those were really special times, man. It's all coming into view now, you know.
You even did one of those WBCN free lunches at 11:30 in the afternoon.
That's
those were great. Those were great.
Yeah,
because I remember those are the best. You know.
Yeah, because you're done then, and you go home.
I know.
You play my gig. It's like. Now we're getting a bit older. The gigs are getting earlier, like 8 o'clock on and off by 9. I'm out of there and stuff like that.
I know. It's crazy.
It has to be because the age, like myself, which is older than you guys, and wants to be. Well, I'm in bed at 7 these days because I'm up at 4. I'm up at 4 getting ready for dialysis and stuff. But the bottom line is. Is to be on a different schedule. I'm like on my old hospital schedule, whereas I used to be on a schedule for casinos. You know, I'd be up till 4 in the morning playing casinos and stuff with mamas and papas and people like that. And then we go out and play and have fun. But you're having fun on the road. Every time you mention every one of those bands, all I can think about is you wailing away in the back having a great old time. You know, because it was honest stuff. It was not makeup. It was just Tom having a good time with remembering certain tunes. Like he said, I remember that from the Beatles. So let's do it that way. Well, he wanted it his way, but it fell right, just in the right place because of the feel.
Yeah. No, I love it. And all the people that, because I'm such a music fan. So even the fact that, like Sean, you brought up, you know, Roy Orbison or Carlene Carr.
Oh yeah,
I think I did the Fabulous Thunderbirds possibly there, and I mean I don't know, but I know there was one time I think I played with a band called Chicken Legs, and they were it was like guys from Little Feet.
That's right. I remember.
I think it was called Chicken Legs. I don't know. And like you brought up Mark Farner, I forgot that one because he and I'm such a big Grand Funk fan, but. So I finished my set, and he had his bus out back. And I remember somebody said, hey, he wants to say hi or something. And I walked out waiting, you know, to say hi. And he asked me to come on the bus. And he asked me to be in their prayer before they went on. Yeah. And it was, like, intense, you know. It was like he did this thing where he was a very religious guy. I didn't know that, you know. And he did this thing on the bus before – and then we all walked out, you know, and he went on stage and played. And I thought, wow, that was a trip, you know.
That would be a definite trip, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, Tom, you've worked with some absolute legends over the years, and I'll go over a few of those in the video, but you also kind of found yourself being the go-to guy to put together bands, the backup bands. You know, some people may or may not know, some of the stars, you know, older as they got older, they went out and played different markets. They would have to, they didn't bring their own band with them. They either couldn't afford it, they just didn't have the players available. So you kind of fell into the lap of being this guy, you know, the guy locally who could put these bands together on a moment's notice to be the backup band for, you know, people like Bo Diddley, Chuck Berry, Shannon, I think you mentioned Gary Puckett, people like that, and all over New England. So how did you kind of find yourself in that position where that's an extremely important position, first of all, but how did you become that guy, so to speak?
Good question. I mean, I don't remember how it happened, but I think it was like it would start with, I know the Chuck Berry thing started, I was in Worcester at the Palladium or somewhere we were at. Some agent got Chuck Berry and they needed a backup band. And somebody said, Tom Hamburg can probably do it. You know, he can probably get the guys and he can play drums.
Yeah.
And so they called me and I remember I did that. And then every time Chuck Berry seemed to play anywhere from like I play with him in Radio City in New York, I play in around New England, you know, in New Jersey, New Hampshire. He'd play a festival somewhere outdoor in New Hampshire, and I would get a call from somebody. They would say, hey, I talked to the guy at the Centrum or the Oyster gig, and he told me that gig went really good to get you.
Yeah.
And then that would turn into the guy from New Hampshire. So all these agents, and then what ended up happening, I think, is these agents booked other shows. So, you know, Gary Puckett and Unigap or Sean on I would be coming down the pike, and they'd say, we need a drummer for that, or we need Tom to get a band. We need somebody to get a band together for that. And so they'd call me, and I'd go, okay, you know, Del Shannon. I'd go, okay,
oh, wow.
I can do it. When is it? You know, and I did Del Shannon shows, and I did Little Anthony and the Imperials, and Bo Diddley, and Peter Noon, of course, and, you know, the Coasters. And so it was, it turned into, you know, I mean, I never had a manager or an agent or anything. They just would call me on my phone and say, we've got, you know, next month, we've got these shows at the South Shore Music Circus or at the Melody Tent in Cape Cod. We've got the, you know, a show with the Del Shannon, the Coasters, the Chavons, Leslie Gore, and Fabian or something. And you, can you back up all of them?
Yeah.
I go, okay, well, what do they want? Like, and they say they want, you know, a keyboard player, a guitar player, a bass player, and they need a sax player, you know. And I would call up my friends, you know, people that I knew that were great musicians. And so I had a whole Rolodex of guys that I could call, you know, and that's how that all started, you know.
And amazing. Plus, your Rolodex, like you said, there were so many good players in the Boston area that you became known.
Oh, yeah.
Playing in town so often. Had a really quite a Rolodex, I'm sure, at that point.
And, and once I would play with an artist, I would get to know what they liked or what they didn't like. Then I could even tailor-made the band for them, you know.
I think that's
why Chuck Berry kept calling me those guys, because, like, Chuck didn't want another guitar player.
Yeah.
And it said, like, in his rider, get a guitar player. Chuck didn't like that. You know, I knew that after the first gig. He didn't like that. And he needed a piano player to play a certain way. So I got it, you know, and how the grooves he wanted. And so I was able to do it. And maybe, you know, sometimes, I mean, Chuck would call me every now and then, you know, and or I would call him and have to, you know, go over stuff for the gig, you know. But no, it was awesome. And that was a real big learning stomping ground for me to learn all these.
For sure. Oh, what a resource you were for them, though.
Yeah, it was great.
And then when you get to move on, you moved on to Nashville and started producing different people. And with that in mind, you've had some really good number ones and some good hits from the band, different bands, and not just Wonderful Buddy Guy. And I'm sure he's been so grateful that you've been able to take him around the world and stuff and play the way that he feels every night, you know, and stuff like that, and look after him and what have you. And that's what you've done with some of them new bands. You've really took them under your wing and produced them, that I think has been absolutely brilliant, because it's like you said, it's more country bluesy rock, you know, on some of them, some of them bands, but they categorize it. As far as I know, it's music, and it feels so damn good, you know. And that's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, it has been, you know. I mean, speaking of like young artists, that's been a cool thing to, like. I'm trying to think. Well, Susan Tedeschi was one of the first ones.
Yes.
You know, making her Just Won't Burn record, and then, but also there's this Quinn Sullivan from Massachusetts. I did his first three records, and I got this guy Chris Stone, Kingfish Ingram, who is he's blowing. You know, we just won a Grammy, not this year, the year before, and he's, you know, selling out all the Stones. Asked him to tour with him. You know, I mean, he's like crazy good, and I've been able to write his songs and with him and produce his records. I mean, he'd never been in a studio when he, so now he's you know, he's on fire, and so those are cool. But it is also like you know, great to work with my idols, you know. You know, I mean, I never dreamed that I'd work with, you know, Keith Richards and Jeff Beck and Clapton and those guys. And so when I am, you know, when it works out that they want me to be involved with their record or what they're doing or whatever's going on, I mean, I'm always pinching myself. I mean, it's just, when Billy Gibbons comes over to my house, you know, to write for his ZZ Top record, you know, I'm, he's still Billy Gibbons, you know, to me.
Yeah.
He's right. Like, holy shit, you know, or Skinner would come over, Leonard Skinner, the band, and, you know, Gary Rosington and all those guys. And you know, so I don't know. I mean, I feel like I don't want to just be dropping names, but, you know, it is, there's a lot of these guys that I grew up going to concerts to see. And when I'm, you know, I never dreamed in my lifetime that I would be actually in a room making music with them or playing drums for them or writing a song with them or for them. And so it doesn't get lost on me. You know, I, I hanging out with Greg Ulm and having him sing one of my songs and recording it with him, I'll never forget that. You know, I'll never forget, you know, Mick Jagger walking in, you know, asking me, what do you want me to do on this, you know? I go, fucking hey, man, you're Mick Jagger, you know?
But Mick,
you know, I don't know, man.
Mick's like that, and especially since they brought up on the white boy blues, as we call it, because that's what mine was with Fleetwood Mac. But this is sensational. Right. This is sensational stuff. And they were
a blues band, right? I mean, like, that's what I mean. I guess when you're asking about me being a producer, you know, playing blues. I mean, they were trying to be a blues band, and it turned into, you know, Tumbling Dice and Brown Sugar and, you know, Satisfaction and Honky Tonk Woman. That's them playing the blues, you know? Yeah. And so for me, the same thing when I'm writing songs for a record that, you know, I'm going to have, you know, Peter Frampton on, that's going to sing with Buddy Guy. I'm writing a song that I think would sound good for Peter Frampton.
Yeah.
Or I'm writing, whatever. And so I'm not thinking, oh, I have to be a, you know, traditional blues guy. I'm just writing a song.
Yeah.
And,
It'll
sound the way I record it, because I kind of sound like I sound and they sound like they sound. It's going to sound, it's going to have that rock and roll bluesy edge, you know? It's just going to.
It's the Buffalo Boston connection. That's what it is.
Yeah, right, man. Absolutely. BB.
Yeah, it is exactly.
We do want you to your own turn, Tom. You have played an amazing, you know, legacy with the roster of people that you've been talking about. I mean, you know, it's hard, like you say, it's hard to be pigeonholed as a blues person because it's all over you're all over the map, right? You're like, you listen to ZZ Top's, Greg Allman's, excuse me, George Thorogood. I mean, there's people all across the spectrum, but I've also heard musicians say that it all comes back to the blues. That's everybody's baseline, essentially, right? So, you know, you do work with guys like Roy Buchanan, Bo Diddley, B.B. King, Hank Williams, James Cotton, Joe Bonamassa. I mean, you really helped Susan Tedeschi get off the ground and kind of, you wrote her two first singles, I believe, correct?
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, I guess it is. It's in everything. I mean, my older brother turned me on to James Cotton, and he turned me on to Roy Buchanan, and he turned me on to the Allman Brothers, and he turned me on to Muddy Waters. And so all these acts that, you know, I ended up kind of working with, I think I kind of grew up listening, and a part of their DNA was in me. So I think, the first time I played with Roy Buchanan, I remember it was at Jonathan Swift in Cambridge, and I got the gig. I was maybe 19 or 20 years old or something, and I was supposed to rehearse, and we never rehearsed. And so, I got there, and finally I met him when we were going on stage. It was sold out.
Wow.
And he said, oh, so you're Tom. You're the drummer, man. What do you want to play? And I was like, I whatever you want to play, you know, your stuff, I guess, you know. And it ended up being that a lot of the stuff I remember listening to with my brother.
I get you.
I was already kind of feeling how maybe it should go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, cool.
And he would do, he would do Sweet Dreams, like a cover of that song. Or he would do Peter Gunn. He would do songs that, you know, you kind of knew if you would listen to music. You know, now if you just listen to pop music or something, you might know that. But I mean, I didn't. I listened to kind of everything. I loved everything. So I was kind of already ready, you know, a little bit.
Your brother got you going.
You can thank your brother for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah,
I'm thinking the same thing, John. I was thinking exactly the same. He did a wonderful job.
So basically, you're known as, I think, from the Boston years, most of us, I think, knew you as a singer, songwriter, and a drummer. But you're a percussionist, you're a composer, you're a producer. You've been wearing like every hat, essentially, especially since moving down to Nashville. Do you have... is there one you enjoy more than others, or you kind of have a jack of all trades? Like, you do everything for everybody, but do you have anything you really kind of consider like your number one spot, like where you really think you're best at, or your preference to do that position, so to speak?
Wow, that's a good one. I think at different times I like doing different things, but more, because what happens is there'll be times when I'm producing records. And so say I have, say I have to do a Keb Mo record, and then I have to do a George Thorogood record, and then I have to do a Buddy Guy record, whatever, you know, a bunch of records in a row. And I have to like write all the songs.
Yeah. Oh.
And so I'm really in focus on all that. And then I'll love being a songwriter, and I love trying to come up with, you know, really cool stuff, material for these records. And then when I go into the studio and I'm playing drums and I'm producing the record, I love being in the studio. I love it. I'm like, and then, but by the third record in a row, after I've been doing this for like 8 weeks, I want to just go out and do a gig. I'm thinking, man, I wouldn't mind just going out in some club and just singing and playing some songs. Because this is, you know, so I think, and then I'll get into that, you know, I'll go, you know what, I think I'm going to go out and do some dates, and I'll go out and do some dates. And then I'll be like, man, I really want to, I've got these ideas in my head for songs, and I'll look at who wants me to do a record, and I'll start, like I just did a record. I'm in the middle of a couple right now, but like this artist that was on American Idol, you know, Jovan Webb, and he's, I did his first record and it blew up, and now we're doing the second one. So I was really in a focused in that. So I'm mixing that record right now, and I'm mixing that record, but I'm also thinking about this next record I have to do, and I have to start writing the songs for. So I think all the hats I wear, I love doing it when I'm doing it. And, but there's times when if I do too much of one, I want to just do something else.
Sure.
I mean, there are times when someone will say, man, would you ever consider, you know, just playing drums on my record? We have a producer, and and I'd be like, I'd love to. I mean, cause I don't get to do that often because I'm busy.
Yeah.
So like just to do that and not have to write the songs and not have to produce the record and not have to make all the decisions and hire everybody, I'll just come in and play drums. Sure. You know, that sounds wonderful. Right.
It's like when you go out to like Buffalo and to Boston to play with people like Sal Bagley, or want to come and play with the old, you know, and you have fun with that whole thing, which changes the demeanor. Yeah, because it's changing the demeanor. Then you get more input for what you're doing on your writing and stuff like that. I mean, because that's the fun stuff with them guys, because they all love to play. And when your musicians all love to play, you just let it all out. It's like John Butcher's playing and Baron Whitfield's hanging and playing with him on a night down here. I'm like, yes, that's how it should be done. Get the guys together, get the girls together, get whomever from that time period, and let them have fun. And by the time the end of the day is done, now you can start thinking of what you're really doing in the studio and what you're doing here and what you're doing there. It works. To me, doing the live stuff before you actually get all the stuff done in the studio helps you fine detail it and helps you do what you do best and take your mind off everything else. Just focus on that, what you're doing, you know. So I love it. I love that, going out and having to play live and stuff like that. Because you've been in the studio long enough, let's go out and do a gig or two. And we did that a bunch of time with the Birds. Let's get out of here. It's too much. And then we came back and, boy, it's done. You know, because you've played all these shows. And you've played all these shows with the songs that you're doing in the studio, just popping in just to see what happens. And then they come back with such wonderful ideas, and it's done. Within a few hours, they can get it all together instead of being working for weeks, costing hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then, you know, and you don't need that. You just go in and boom, don't next and stuff.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I love those guys, Sal and those guys. I mean, those guys, I have a great band in Boston, and
they're wonderful musicians in their own right, and what they did with their own bands, but also playing with musicians from that time period, and having fun with the time period, and every one of them that's out now, from the Fools, the Stompers, are still having that kind of fun in their particular field. Because they're only going out to so many of the places that they've used to play from years ago, you know, and then places are still getting packed with all their friends and fans.
But again, the shows are early, earlier these days. So you're not going on at 12 midnight of like channel, you know, headlining at 12 midnight. Well, all the people are coming from the other clubs just to see you play because you start at 12 midnight. Well, you're trashed by then, so you just get whatever's going on. And
yeah, you got to pace yourself. You
exactly, know, exactly.
Okay. Those midnight and 1 a.m. headlining at the Channel days are long gone, for sure.
Oh, that's why I love the when I was going out with the mamas and papas and stuff with the casinos. I could put, we, you know, we did three shows a night, and we did them till 4 in the morning and stuff, you know. It was that kind of thing. And wow. It was, yeah, you do one show at 10 or 11 and then the next show after that. And then at 4 o'clock in the morning, you quit, so you just... okay, well, we'll go down and just have something to eat now. And that's how your day was, you know, when you're doing them casinos right. And staying there for a week. And but it's fun because people are coming to you and you can get more out of the people at that time period. And if you go and do any rehearsing or anything, the people would want to be in there while you're doing that and stuff, you know, to come out of the casino that you're playing and trying to get in the doors, you know. But I'm just saying that's...
You're busy. It almost seems like, maybe I'm reading this the wrong way, it's almost like you go on vacation, take the rattlesnakes up, play a few gigs in the Northeast, and, you know, with your friends, and get behind a drum kit, and just have a good time. It's like your break from the mundane. And that's not mundane at all, what you're doing, but as far as it kind of gets you back in that the fun spirit of it, and then you go back to the studio, do what you do after that, you know?
Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah, it is like that. Exactly.
You've got so many notes inside you, Tom. You've got to get them out somehow without causing aggro with the last note. Why did I hit that wrong? I know it should be this way. And you don't have time to discuss it. Just do it and stuff. Okay, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's your feeling. You're feeling so you just... focus on that. That's what I saw when you played every time at the club that I saw you at. And I did see you running around looking at whatever band's playing and seeing out, oh, what's that? Is that the latest and the greatest, or is it, am I better than that? Or can I do better than that? You know? And,
Well, you know, we were really blessed with so many great local bands.
Oh,
definitely. I mean, to me, that's the one thing that just slayed me when I got to Boston, and I would just go to, you know, go into these clubs and see the Stompers and see, you know, like you mentioned, all these other bands, you know, the Enemy and the Neighborhoods, whoever, you know, just killing. And I go, wow, they were doing original material, John Butch for Axis.
Oh yeah.
Just doing their thing. And it was just so inspiring for me. Cause I was young and I thought, boy, I gotta get a band together. And I got to write songs and play. I have to do what they're doing, you know, and see if I can, you know, get out there and do this because this is happening, you know. So, you know, I would love it.
We talked about that quite a bit, Tom. It's like we kind of feel like we were very spoiled in the, you know, the Boston music scene.
Oh, definitely.
Where there were so many amazing talents, bands, artists. And the ecosystem was there right then. Remember, there was like, we had BCN and COZ and AAF and the college radio station. We had the Phoenix. We had a really supportive network, you know, and there's obviously friendly competition between the bands. You want to, you know, have the biggest crowd, play the biggest club, but you also respect each other. And like you said, there was so much talent there.
Yeah.
And it helps you build these backing bands for all these international artists later on. And it's, but that was really a really magical time back then.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, it was amazing. So much amazing stuff happening.
No, you have something. You were going to say something, Dickie?
No, I was thinking out loud. go for it, Sean.
So more of the highlights, so to speak. I know you've done, you know, with different artists, Jimmy Kimmel, the Conan Show, Late Show, Letterman Show. You've done the White House a couple of times. I mean, maybe give us a little bit of, you know, some inside baseball. Like how, any of those shows in particular where you on the national stage, so to speak, any memories that come to your mind right away?
Yeah,
that's well, good. I mean, every time playing the White House was just amazing. I know one time when Obama was in office, I went there and played with Mick Jagger, Booker T was the keyboard player.
Oh my!
And Jeff Beck, Sun Guitar, and Buddy Guy. It was just loaded. It was insane. And B.B. King. And when I went up, it was to play with Jeff Beck, Buddy Guy, and Mick Jagger. And I remember we did rehearsals at the White House, and I had played there before on another thing with Kev Moe and a bunch of people. And I was just in the White House rehearsing with everybody, and Obama came down the stairs.
Oh, wow.
Just, you know, just in his, jeans. I think he had jeans on and a shirt. And we all were kind of just standing there, you know, just not really knowing what to do. And I know he walked over and he said, "Hey, Tom, welcome back."
Yeah, I love it.
And I went, "Thank you, sir." You know, like I was thinking he was going to, you know, go get out of my house or move or something. And he goes, "Hey, welcome back, Tom." And I thought, I know that, you know, he probably was, you know, told who was in the room before he went down there. You know, and I did meet him previously, you know. So, but I thought, that's just good, man. This guy's good. And that was the night he sang. He sang Sweet Home Chicago.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, because it was Narada, Michael Walden on drums, on one drum kit, and I was on the other drum kit. And but I also remember, like, right before we went on, because it was live, they were taping live, and I was in this dressing room area, little green room, and I'm sitting there, and Jeff Beck's on my right, and Mick Jagger's on my left. And they're both asking me questions about the arrangement of the song. Because they're going, "So, Tom, Mick, so do I sing after Buddy's solo, or do I sing after, you know, Jeff's solo?" And I go, "You sing after Jeff's solo." And Jeff goes, "Is Buddy soloing first or my soloing?" And I go, all right. So I go, "Listen, you're soloing, Mick, you know, Buddy's going to sing the first verse. Jeff, you're going to take the first solo. And then the next verse, Mick, you're going to sing that." He goes, "Oh, right on. Got it. And I go, "And then after that, Buddy's going to solo. And then you're both going to sing the last verse, you know." And I'm thinking to myself, if anyone told me when I was 16, I'd be sitting in this room, in this conversation, I'd say, "You're out of your mind, you know, this is crazy." And
that's incredible.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, so there's so many of these things that happen that I, on the inside, I'm just flipping out, you know, flipping out, and that I'm even in the room. So I feel blessed, you know, all this stuff.
I love it, Tom. That's awesome, because that's how it's real. Remember, folks,
yeah,
out
it
there,
is real. You're,
it's real.
You're, and you're right. It is real because they're real people.
Yeah, you know? I mean, exactly.
You think of them as these idols, like, I could tell you some crazy ones where I'm thinking, how does this guy not these guys, but, you know, some other band where I was thinking, man, I'm trying to explain them how this goes, you know, and they've made the best records I've ever heard in my life, but they're asking me, you know, and I'm thinking, how is this, you know, but then you realize they're just people, you know,
they're just people,
you know, and it could, you know, could have been an accident the way they did that song, you know, that one song that I love, you know,
yeah. Well, it's wonderful stuff. That's exactly what we're after, because that's your life, Tom. That's what you've done, and that's what you're still doing, and it's wonderful to have that. You know, you don't have to go too crazy, but you can really go crazy, if you know what I mean. It's a wonderful time to be, because this energy that's been coming down from Boston to Nashville, you know, with you, with Robert Harris, all those, you know, guys that's gone down there. We've got a lot of the crew that used to work at the Channel, like Scott Pullman's down there. And a bunch of the crew guys that worked at the Channel gone all down to Nashville to work, and they've been there for years and doing stuff that you know, because that's where everything seems, all the good quality stuff is still coming out of, you know,
it's an industry town, you know, it's like where there's, you know, the tour buses leave from here, and records get made here, and the publishing companies are here, and the record companies are here, so it's like you can, I guess, come down and try to get involved, you know, and you don't have to be spread out somewhere. It's there is
the thing about it.
Crew guys.
The thing that's real good is you can go downtown and play any night if you want to. You can go down that's the key. That's what we love about a scene. And Sean and I talked about that, about the Boston scene at that time period. You could go to play at Bun Raddy's or something and then come down to the Channel afterwards and play there, you know, and have a great old time. Or you could come down and see somebody at the Channel that says, oh, come on, get up, jump up with us and stuff and play with us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that was the time, and you can do that in Nashville. You know, I know they've got it all themed out and whatever, but you can still go down and play if you want to, because who you are and stuff and what you do. It's the real scene. I mean, we went with the Birds and had a great old time down there with the Birds. We got into trouble there at Roger Miller's place, but other than that, we had White Lightning does it every time, let me tell you.
but, oh, that's funny. That's wild.
But
I think he went to Nashville pretty much at the right time.
So yeah.
What I understand, other musician friends I know have gone down there, and like you just said, it's really become almost like music business. It's almost gotten too big for some people now. It's almost like everybody's a pro, no matter which guy you walk any club any night of the week. There's pros all over the stage, walking up and down the street trying to get a gig, and you almost have to leave after a while to go, you know, kind of go and do your own thing, because it's just because so competitive down there, because it became like really the industry space for the last few years.
The people coming up from the South are now, you know, from Memphis and places that's like that, they're coming in more and more into town in there and whatever. So you're going to get all those hardcore blues guys, or rock blues, as I would say, more than blues. To actually work with, because they want to get someone like yourself in there, and wow, let's see what we got going in. And the next thing you know, they're up in the charts, like you said, with some of this. So, Sean, what's the other questions you got wrote down? I know you've got a few.
A couple more, if you don't mind, Tom. I just want to say, my first thought of you these days is almost like you've kind of been Buddy Guy's man for like a while now, right? And I think, I just realized he's still at the touring, which is crazy, and I'm assuming you're still out there playing with him, yes?
90 years of age.
You know what? Yeah. You know what? I told him recently that I'm not going to do the 90-year-old, the new tour with the new record. The new record just won a Grammy. I'm really excited about that, and it could be one of his, people are saying it's one of his best records he's ever made. And I've made, I think, 9 Buddy Guy records. And so I am real excited. But I loved playing drums for him. And I did tour the world, around the world many, many times with him. And it just, you know, I mean, everywhere. And I mean, from, you know, Europe to Israel to Brazil to Japan to wherever, you know. This tour is going to start in Australia and go around the world again. And I'm just so busy producing records and writing these songs. And to be honest with you, I had so much fun and playing all these places I never dreamed that I'd be able to play and go and do. And I'm so blessed that I was able to do it for so long. But I think, you know, it's funny. To me, I guess this is a little bit of a personal thing, but it's just to me sometimes you think about at this age how many more times you have around the world.
Yeah, that's true.
And I've done it so many times. I've been doing this for so long that, I mean, I love playing the Hollywood Bowl. I love playing Madison Square Garden. I love playing it. But that was a dream as a drummer when I was in Boston, and just go, man, if I could just play, you know, the Beacon Theater one time, or can I, you know, whatever, you know, or go to London for one time and play, you know. And after all those dreams came true, I'm thinking, you know what, I don't mind not going. And, you know, I'm okay as long as I'm creating and making music and making music for other people that can go and do that, you know. Like Kingfish, I want him to play all these places. I want everyone that I'm working with to go out and do those places. But the traveling and all of that to get there, and you're out, you're not home for months at a time.
Yeah.
I think I'm just at a point now where, like you say, I'm good to go out with the Rattle, my band, Tom Hammer's band, go to New England and play five shows, and that's great for me, and then come back and make a couple records.
Yeah,
you know? Sure.
I told him, and he's cool with that. He's just that's what he does. That's all he's done his whole life.
Yeah.
So he doesn't produce records for people and write songs for people. He that's his life on the road, buddy guy. He goes on stage and he kills every night. And there's a demand for him to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And so he wants to do that.
Yes.
You know, he's probably making more money than he's ever made because of all the stuff now, all the new record. And we did the Sinners movie, you know, where he was in that. And he was I don't know if you saw that movie, The Sinners. It set a record for most Oscar nominations. And, you know, I'm in it with a little bit at the end, you know, playing drums for him. But he acted in it. And so he's got a lot of offers right now. And so I'm really excited for him. And he just won the Grammy. So I'm just, you know, I want him to go and do it and enjoy it. And, you know, for as long as he can, man. I just, I just don't want to, you know, I don't want to get on a 30-hour flight to.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense.
You know,
you're in an envious position now where you can do that, Tom, which is great. Like you said, you've been there, you've seen the show many, many times. You've been all over the world, and you've got so much going on at home with your studio. You know, just all the work, like we talked before, composing, you know, drumming when you can, songwriting, singing, producing. There's just so much you're still there able to do and kind of pick your own, you know,
exactly.
Play with your buddies in New England for a week here and there. And but I was going to mention, because I thought you were on that tour with him. But anybody who was listening, I know Buddy Guy is coming to Boston again in the area. He'll be playing in Lynn on August 5th. I was going to say, hopefully we'll see Tom there, but I guess you're on that tour, which is fine. But I just want to say, before we do wrap up, 7 Boston Music Awards, ASCAP Award, 5 Grammys, 10 Grammy nominations, which I think is almost more impressive. You've been nominated 10 different times, a different record, which is incredible. So,
yeah.
You know, thank you for making the time. We know you're very, very busy. We haven't forgotten about you up here. We're really happy to have you join us for this call, and we wish you nothing but continued success and hope to see you back in the Boston area again soon.
Oh, definitely.
You know, I appreciate you guys reaching out, because sometimes I think, man, I hope they remember that I, you know, because I had such a great time being a part of that scene forever, you know?
Yeah.
The channel and all these bands, and I love them all and made great friendships, and I still think about them all the time. I think about you guys, and so I'm honored to be on the show, and you know, next time there's any kind of reunion or something, don't hesitate to call me or something, you know.
Yeah, Sean's the one for that. We want a channel reunion. We're talking about that, and Sean's the one that wants to put this together. I want to put it together too before I have problems, you know, because I'm not that well. But
I hope you're getting stronger, Dinky, and it's great to connect with you after all these years. You were a legend at the channel. I mean, you were the cat, you know.
Well, we all were. I mean, you were when you first got there, because you just played the way that you did and do, and it's fantastic. I mean, the playing was. I've been with Mick, I've been with Michael Walden, I've been with Mahavishnu, J. Billy Cobham, I've been with all these wonderful drummers, you know, and. That was what I did, and I had Steely Dan stuff. I had Bernard Purdy come and play on an album, and Chuck Rainey on the bass and stuff. For you know, Walter just loved that stuff, you know. And the bottom line is that I've always been around the drummers, and because the drummers give you the beat, they give you the feeling, they move your body, your soul, your spirit.
Yeah.
And Tom, you're one of the best in the world for that. And you should get all the accolades that you deserve. There's no ifs and buts. All these Grammy stuff is fantastic. I mean, you know, especially with all the politics that go on. I just want the bottom line is that you're a wonderful drummer, you're a wonderful person, and you have fun every time. We can see that. And when you see the instruments being played, whatever it is, and the person playing them are having great fun, your spirit's lifted. And in the channel, it was lifted to. I quit going on the road in 79 just because of. I just got fed up with all the politics going on. And then the bottom line was the audience were getting more anesthetized than the damn bands. And so there were people that were going out of it, and too out of it, couldn't even comprehend the music when we were playing, you know, with, I had Ambrosia out at that time. And it was just one of them things, you know. It's just, even with Warren Zevon and people like that, Warren had his crew that came down and his people that came, but then there was the people like the Grateful Dead that loved him. And so we did a Dead show that I'd done a bunch with the Dead, and I couldn't believe it. It was so much spirit, so much heart. Everyone in the group came down to see Warren because the energy, the inspiration that you do, and it's the same with you, Tom. You give that inspiration as soon as you start hitting them drums. That's why Mick Jagger said, "What do I do next? Tell me what I do." He used to say that to Charlie all the time, you know.
Yeah, Charlie, man. Oh, man.
All right.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the kind words. I really appreciate it, and it's an honor to be talking to you guys, and, you know, well, God bless you all.
Well, thank you, Tom Hambridge and Sean McNally, and this is Two Pints in the Corner, closing out.